You're listening to another episode of Open Source CXO, the podcast designed to share insights on how to excel in your business using technology, regardless of the industry. Host Robert Kehoe is a self-taught software developer who has grown to the role of CEO. Renowned for his collaborations with organizations such as Stanford University, Nelnet, and Louis Vuitton, he continually seeks new challenges to conquer in the world of tech. Accompanying him is Don Blackburn, a veteran COO with over 25 years of experience in cultivating diverse relationships and driving innovation in various technical projects. Each week, they'll be sitting down with some of the nation's foremost technology leaders to develop an open source playbook, drawing from their firsthand experiences in the field. Let's talk some tech.
Well, getting started today, for this episode, I wanted to point out that Robert is on vacation now that we're in the summer months, and filling in for Robert is David Welch. Dave is one of our directors at ActiveLogic and all-around good guy and podcast veteran himself. YouTube. Correct? YouTube, yeah. Not podcast?
I don't talk to other people. I just talk to myself.
Just talk to the camera. Yeah. I got you. All right.
He imagines the people.
Yeah, exactly.
And then our guest today is Alex Savinok, who is CTO of Rig, who's a startup SaaS product.
Yeah, SaaS product marketplace play, similar to Uber, focused on breakdowns in the trucking space.
Outstanding. And welcome, by the way, to our podcast. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Wanted to talk to you about a couple of different things. One, and we can start with Rig. I know you've got a long background, extensive background in IT, but with Rig, you just, I'm guessing, just saw kind of a spot, an empty space in the market that you could fill.
Yeah, I had a friend who was a mobile mechanic, and he came to me with his problems. He's like, I live in Kansas City. This is basically the middle of America. Thousands of trucks driving by every single day, and I can't get a job. Like, I can't get someone to call me. Yeah. Like, my way too many truck drivers have problems that they can't find a mechanic, but I can't find them either.
Right.
And that was sort of the genesis of the problem. I started looking into, I mean, I have an econ major. Like, I constantly look at markets and supply and demand and price. Like, how is price determined? How are people finding supply? And how is that supply, what is the demand and what is the supply? How are they meeting? What's the marketplace?
Right.
So in this situation, the marketplace is very inefficient because the way a truck driver finds a mechanic is a Google search or a search through NTTS or Truckdown. What that means is they basically look through a list of phone numbers, call people in serial fashion based on whoever paid more. And oftentimes that means the guy who's got the biggest marketing budget and the best website, not necessarily the best skills, the best quality work, or the most experience, gets on top.
Sure.
And that is kind of an inversion of the values that the driver is looking for. He's looking for good price, good quality, and likely timely service.
Yeah.
So, and none of that really goes into who's on top on Google.
Sure.
And so I realized the supply and demand wasn't working based on what it was supposed to be working on.
And it's just a mobile app at this point?
No, it's a web app. We got a mobile driver app. We got a mobile mechanic app. And we got a web platform for shops. We have a web platform for fleets probably coming out in 6 months or something like that. That just means, you know, sometime in the future.
when you have time to finish it.
When I have time to get to it.
Yeah, gotcha.
I think you understand what that, you know, a timeline means.
Yes, I do. So I would think one of the big challenges, not just certainly the tech. I mean, you've been in tech the whole time, and now you're a CEO.
Yeah.
You've been a CTO with a large team. Now you're a CEO, and it's a... Are you a one-man show? Do you have other developers?
Right now, basically we're doing the development myself. We did a lot of early bootstrapping. We had a team. SVB failure really made the market really hard to raise capital in. On top of it, our team was in Russia, so that was complicated.
Yeah.
I couldn't even send them payments for a while, and it was. I mean, I'm Russian, so I speak Russian fluently. Mm-hmm. My wife's family is from Ukraine, so it was a unique
dynamic. Yeah.
Okay. I have a brother-in-law who runs a software outsourcing firm in Ukraine, and you know, that I was outsourcing to guys in Russia, and I was, you know, it's not
a little political. Yeah.
So I eventually we couldn't keep working with them. I couldn't afford a large team because there just wasn't capital for it.
Sure,
we hadn't started producing revenue yet, and the market, right? When we're talking investor expectations after SEB failure, really shifted to revenue-driven metrics, and it became, if you don't have revenue, it becomes much, much harder to raise capital. So right. It became really difficult, but, you know, we improvised. I basically started doing all the soft. We transitioned to focusing on revenue first. We already had a product, figured out how to adjust that product to start producing revenue. Mm-hmm. So started generating revenue in October. Now, I think this month, we're on pace to hit $50,000 in revenue a month. And transaction volumes are probably going to be around $150,000 a month. So it's growing. And I think in June, we doubled our revenue. In July, I expect it to be around
30%.
Nice. Outstanding.
Are you focusing mostly on the individual trucker or trucking companies as far as bringing them on board?
But the approach to both of them is different. So you approach a truck driver a little different than you would a fleet. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting with fleets is the payment method is different. The way they do things is very different. So right. A fleet will oftentimes like to pay with industry-specific payment methods because everything is factored, they have credit lines, and they want to pay out of them. They don't want to pay out mm-hmm. of their cash. So, you know, EFS payments, you know, T-checks, things like that are really, really important in the industry. Working on getting those out this month, something I'm working on now.
Okay.
So, that's the, the bigger difference. There's other, distinctions where, fleets are far more time sensitive, whereas an individual mm-hmm. truck driver is more price sensitive. So a fleet is willing to pay more as long as you can get someone out quicker. Mm-hmm. So it's different opportunities.
Right.
And a driver is easier to find.
Right.
It's one person, Google Ads at the right place will get them.
So I was going to ask, because that's the biggest challenge I would think as a startup is the marketing side, right? It's getting the name out, making people aware of you're there.
It is absolutely, as a guy who comes in from the tech side, it's not something that I came in with experience.
Yeah.
Though what's interesting is my previous experience with Vertigo is that we had so many different unique strategies, marketing strategies, that I think I basically walk through how to implement each of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had influencer-driven marketing. We had ad-based Instagram, Facebook, Google Ads marketing. We did events. We did, referral. I don't think we ever did any kind of referrals, though. I mean, mm-hmm. It's something that in my space right now with the Rick would probably work well. It's something I'm probably going to take a look at.
Sure.
I definitely had a lot of exposure to different marketing campaigns mm-hmm. and marketing strategies, but never actually did it myself. So it's different when you do it yourself and you have to test things out. You have to actually track your metrics, track, how much you're spending versus how much you're earning. So it's a different experience. Honestly, I enjoy it a lot. I may enjoy it more than development. With development, whenever you're building something, every time you build add incremental value, it's not necessarily tangible. Mm-hmm. With marketing, the moment you twist a dial and you see revenue go up, that's right. Hard. Yeah. That's a thrill that's hard to replicate with development.
Yeah.
As a entrepreneur, that's kind of what I'm aiming for. So anytime I change something, I see revenue go up, that's very exciting. There's no amount of code I could create.
You don't get that rush.
Get that rush.
You don't see a massive increase of users every time you push?
No. I think that is probably one of the major disconnects for many founders and entrepreneurs who come from the tech side. Hmm. Is that, they really enjoy creating elegant code. But I think they've never experienced the rush of money coming in at higher rates.
Right, right.
So that is really, you know, it's a lot of fun to do that. So
sure.
I'm enjoying it a lot.
Yeah. From the tech perspective, we deal with a fair amount of startups and people that are trying to bootstrap a startup and have a great idea, but trying to get it to market is always a challenge, right? The one thing we always talk about, and I'm curious to hear how your experience has been, is I've counseled people before of, you know, pick an MVP, try to pick a product that you can get out there that's not bare bones, but something you have those folks that think they got to go out with, you know, a fully baked, you know, yeah, product.
The way I say it is, how wrong do you want to be? Mm-hmm. Do you want to, if you make a big product and you put $10 million into it, you're going to be $10 million into a bad product.
Right.
Because it's not going to work from the beginning anyway. So how much money do you want to put into a bad product? Because it's going to be a bad product when you release it.
I think it's Elon Musk that's said, you know, fail quickly and learn, right? And I think there's, and that's probably butchering that quote, but.
Well, how big do you want your failure to be?
Right. Yeah.
Make it smaller.
Yeah. Well,
at least you figure out what you did wrong and quicker.
Right. To assume that you know exactly what the market wants is, you know, can be a little foolish.
Right? You know, it has to be somewhat approximate somewhere, but you're going to be way off because you have to really be finely tuned. People aren't going to. No one in the market is going to account for your deficit. Like, they're not going to care. If your product isn't working the way you expect it, no one's going to give you a second chance. This is a market. One has to show you kindness or mercy.
Right. That's true. Yeah, it has to work when you go to market, when you go live. But
I mean, the market isn't a charity.
Have you gotten a significant amount of feedback since you put the product? So you get feedback from both the truckers and the mechanics.
I mean, we've been iterating for almost, we released our product 2 years ago.
Okay.
And we've been iterating on it for 2 years. And personally, I think the greatest indicator of success for a startup entrepreneur is time in the market. I mean, how quickly do they iterate and how long can they last? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times that for an individual person, that's actually how much pain can you tolerate?
Right.
How much fear can you handle?
Sure.
Because it's going to get, there's going to be times it can look like you're going to fail. There's going to be times when it's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be comfortable. And if you aren't able to manage all those emotions well, it's not likely that you're going to last more than a few a year, maybe.
Yeah.
So I found that time in market and the ability to iterate consistently over time is a better indicator of success than almost anything.
Gotcha. So how far off were your original? So how much did you learn going to market?
So some of our original assumptions were correct.
Okay.
But what was wrong was, how do we get people to use it? So we were correct in assuming that drivers would really want to get to mechanics. What we didn't understand really was the chicken or the egg problem for a network. If you don't have a network, you don't have a product in our situation. And even if I have the best looking app, it works exactly how people expect it, but there aren't 3,000 mechanics on the other side ready to respond. Mm-hmm. I don't have a product.
Correct.
That's a marketplace play. So our biggest problem was, okay, so we got drivers using this, but now they don't like the app because there's no one on the other end, really.
They got two mechanics to choose from.
How do we get this to grow incrementally?
Sure.
So that was, you know, our journey over the last 2 years was, hey, how do we grow? How do you go from a market that requires 3,000 mechanics, and how do you make it evolve gradually?
Mm-hmm.
It's taking small steps, evolutionary steps, up to a large market that then you can expose to fleets, drivers, whatever. Right. I mean, that I think was the biggest problem we've solved. I mean, with 3,000 mechanics in our network, we had over, I think, 600, 700 mechanics do jobs for us just in the last 6 months.
Oh, nice.
So
is that geographically around here?
All over the U.S.
Oh, okay. So how are you getting a mechanic in Utah? How do they find out? Google Ads and
Google Ads. There's a good deal of back. Like it would take me about 20 minutes to explain the whole process of how we did all of this. So we made it as easy as possible for the mechanic so that they never had to download the app until they knew they were going to get $600, $800 out of it. And that was really the thing that changed everything was a mechanic or a person, like mechanics naturally are not oriented towards using apps. They're not usually your 18, 19, 20-year-old Instagram type of person.
Right. They're not watching
influencers. They're not watching influencers much. They're probably the hardest people to get to use technology.
Sure.
Because they're, one, they're making a good amount of money, and they never had to use an app to do it before. So I had to convince them that it was worth doing it this way and why. So whenever there was money on the line, they were willing to work with me.
Sure.
Whenever I could get them a $600 job and they didn't have to pay $150 to get that job.
You get your money from the from the trucker side?
Yeah, I get my money from the trucker side, and they don't have to pretend to be advertisers. They don't have to try to think like a marketing genius. Like they don't have to figure out how to get their name, get exposure.
Right.
They can just focus on being a mechanic.
Gotcha. That was the other thing I was going to bring up, because one of the things we always fight with, not fight, but a big consideration when you're doing a SaaS product or a startup especially, is the user experience, right? And your user community is totally different. Your user community is truckers and mechanics.
And I mean, that has to be really, really simple.
It's got to be straightforward, simple, and probably not terribly flashy, right?
Well, it could be flashy. It has to be simple. Meaning, there's no need for super, like, there's fade in, fade out effects, just pointless. Like, there's very little room for animation in terms of value. Like, the user does not value animation or special effects, unless they somehow communicate something that makes things clear. But what we did realize is, one, we're dealing with people that are in high stress situations. Their truck that's probably worth, $100,000, $200,000 just broke down. So our app has to be very easy to use, because we're not just dealing with people who don't like technology. We're dealing with people who are really upset trying to use technology for the first time.
Right.
And at the end of the day, they're probably going to be paying a pretty big bill. So they may not always be happy with us at the end, but it's not really our fault either. We've provided, probably the best
price they can get.
We're
trying to help.
We're getting the best price they can get. They just... The problem is the truck broke, and sometimes you end up being the you take the blame for the truck break. So exactly. You got to yell at a human, right?
Yeah.
So these are all mobile mechanics that you're working
yes.
with?
Yes. Okay. Well, some of them have. I mean, most of them are. Some of them have shops that have mobile mechanics, and so the unique thing about the trucking space is the cost to tow a large unit is very high.
Mm-hmm.
You can take thousands of dollars to just take them a few miles, because the cost is to get a wrecker that can tow a big, like, first of all, those wreckers cost $1.5 million, $2 million. Mm-hmm. The insurance on them is insane, and a lot of times in places like, I think, New York, there's unions that won't even let you buy a wrecker if you want to. So there's so much cost involved in actually towing a unit. Oftentimes it's way cheaper to get it fixed on the side of the road. So the average cost for mobile repair on the side of the road is like $600. Average cost for a tow, just a few miles, like $1,500, $2,000. So it almost always makes sense to get a mechanic on site, figure out what needs to get repaired and do it there, instead of trying to tow a unit, like a truck. Because not only that, most semis have their load plus, and that's two. You have to get two units. Someone to tow the actual...
Because you don't want to leave that load
you don't want
on the side of the highway, right?
And then you got to have someone to tow the actual tractor. So the tractor and trailer need to be towed. So now that doubles your costs.
Yeah.
So that's why towing is really ineffective. Sometimes there's no choice. You have to do it. But if you can avoid that, almost everyone will. So it's a much bigger market than just the regular, not commercial, regular car market space for mobile repair. It's not that large, because most people just $100 to tow to a shop.
Yeah,
AAA. AAA, yeah. Just get it towed. So in our case, that is not, the commercial space is very different because of the cost of towing, and it's much more effective to repair on the side of the road.
Gotcha.
So talking about getting the need in front of the mechanics, right? So I have a little bit of experience in the industry with a former employer, and that process is a lengthy one, and a lot of it is towing and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's going through making, you know, there's a call in, there's checking with multiple entities to get bids, and like, how do you, obviously you've got to find a way to shorten that for
an individual. Yeah, so for instance, on the bidding process, on average, you're trying to get 4 to 5 bids, but that usually takes an hour and a half. In our system, it's 5 minutes.
Wow.
Because our mechanics use their apps, submit bids, and we blast within a single area. So let's say you break down in Kansas City. We send out, as soon as you submit a request into our system, we send out a notification or text message to all the mechanics in our system within 200 miles. They get it. They either open up our web link or our app, submit a bid, and we usually get 2 to 4 in 5 minutes. And the crazy thing about the market is like sometimes your prices are 200% higher in the same region, the same quality, same time. And this guy's charging $450, this guy's $150. The market is, and that's really the hallmark of an inefficient market. When prices vary that much, great opportunity for arbitrage. I come from the finance, I actually interned at HSB Risk, so I have a lot of finance background. So as I said, I always look at things from a marketplace perspective, like price, arbitrage. Mm-hmm. Those are the things I understand very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a day trader. I lost a lot of money as a day trader. I lost $20,000 in a day once, and then I just quit. I was like, you know what?
Yeah, that would make you get out.
There were people who lost more, but I didn't have that much reserve, so I was like, okay, this is enough for me. I got to go do something else.
Maybe not meant for a bit. Gotcha.
So.
Interesting. I never thought of that. So it's a bid process. You don't just go and search, here's a list of 4 mechanics that are within 10 miles, and I'll pick the one I want.
Most fleets, it's a bid process. But the problem is the bidding process is very, very long. So a lot of times they'll just settle for whatever they get first.
The first one
If they land on the guy who gave him a 200%, you know, a price that's 200, 300% higher than best price in the area, they're overpaying significantly, plus losing time probably.
So at this point, the trucker just enters the information, you know, the type of truck he has and the problem estimation and things like that. And then it goes out, a blast, text or notification via mobile to all the mechanics in the area.
And they have
X number of minutes to reply, or they can reply whenever.
Reply whenever they want. There's no time limit, but the guy who replies fastest usually gets the job.
Yeah, right. Because the trucker's not going to sit there for a day
I mean, we've had guys sit for a day. There's some areas that are just in times that are really hard to get a mechanic. Like if you're broken down in the middle of South Dakota, you're probably going to wait for a day or two, maybe. Or like you break down on July 4th. Sorry. You shouldn't be driving on July 4th.
Exactly.
Just because if you break down, you're going to be stranded for a whole day. Make sure your truck is nice and, you know, ready to drive before you drive on a holiday.
Exactly. So then from a support standpoint, do you get a lot of calls, support calls?
Yeah.
Truckers and mechanics going on.
We get about 100 a day.
100 phone calls?
Yeah.
We do. Or emails?
Phone calls.
Really?
Yeah. We do around, you know, 10 to 15 jobs a day right now. So it's a lot. we have to man a call center and everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we have to outsource all. And one of the things we decided on early on is we outsourced to South America because it increased our market share, because we can now target people who speak Spanish. And there's a lot of them in the southern United States. And as long as their English is good, I mean, most people will deal with an accent. It's not that uncommon in the U.S. to hear an accent.
No.
So, and they speak Spanish, so it actually increased our target market by 10-15%, because there's a good chunk of people in the southern United States who do not English very well, driving trucks, not speaking English.
Yeah, makes sense.
So.
That's interesting.
Are you tracking, obviously you get all the bids and things like that. Do you do any form of tracking and reporting? I'm thinking like cars.com, you got the admins, like this is a good deal.
We track all of it, but we haven't I just haven't had the time to build a lot of the reporting. Right. And we will eventually, once we release that fleet portal in 6 months.
6 months.
Six months. Ish. Yeah, so it's definitely something that we have the data to do. Mm-hmm. We track and keep all that data. It's the reporting, visualization stuff that we haven't built yet. I mean, and there's a lot of reporting that I'm doing internally for myself. Like, I track our conversion funnel. I track how often someone calls. How often does request turn into a job? Mm-hmm. How often is the job complete? What's our percentage? What does it look like if demand increases? How does our funnel, what does that mean for revenue? So all of that, the data we gather goes straight into a revenue model that we're working on. So the fun part for me is the combination of technology, finance, and marketing is
sure. I could see where it'd be helpful if I was, a truck driver that's broken down and I've got a certain issue, and I put that in to have it kick back and say, based on location and the type of repair, your average cost should be or past repairs have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
That way they know they're getting bids are going, well, that's way higher than what normal is.
Absolutely. This is definitely something in our product roadmap.
Yeah.
Just
not there yet.
Not there yet.
It's
9 months away.
Add that to the project board. All right. Got it. One of the other topics, pivoting once again to that you and I kind of touched on briefly, but I wanted to get your opinion because you said something that was interesting to me and got me thinking about it. And that's AI. That's what everybody's into AI now, right? It's just everything.
I almost wish I could put AI on my app right now. It'll get funded in like 3 months.
That's all you got to do is say we're, AI generator, AI driven.
What's funny about my previous company, Vertigo, is the CEO was always trying to use the it was 360 video, virtual reality. Like, he was constantly trying to use what was hypey and include it in our pitch, even though it didn't have anything to do with it, because you could always project it as something that we could do if we got the funds for it. So I always thought, like, okay, I need to pull one of those moves and just attach, a slide about AI.
Just put it on the website. Yeah. They'll never know.
Yeah. Increase my chance of funding by 100%.
Nobody's going to drill down and say, exactly how are you using AI and what is your LLM? And, it's not going to be that. But it was interesting, and I would agree with you that it's a horribly overused term and horribly, everybody says everything's AI driven and it's really not. But
It's very complicated.
So you haven't found a way to use it yet.
There's ways we can, but it's not going to be generative AI. What do I generate? I can generate quotes, but there's no, the AI isn't going to go do the job for the mechanic. So the quote has to come from the mechanic. I mean, I could project an estimate. That's probably the most I could do with generative AI.
Machine learning of some
kind. Yeah. Shooting steps. There's areas we could apply it. For instance, we have a lot of data on breakdowns, right? And if we combine that with ELD telemetric data about, because every truck has a unit that actually tracks its mileage, location.
Onboard computers,
Using the location, you can get the time, the date, the weather. You can combine all those factors as input into a model and then have your breakdowns as a signal. And there you have a predictive model of, what conditions lead to a breakdown. That would be how I would use AI, predicting breakdowns. And finding what conditions have occurred. Let's say a fleet is driving a unit and all of a sudden we have a lot of conditions that are making this unit likely to break down. What do we have to change to bring that probability down? What part of the unit do we have to service? All that kind of stuff. Yeah. Because your breakdowns end up being your signals. And with LLM models or AI in general, machine learning, right? You have data and signal. Something that comes in that explains the circumstances. For instance, I did this with image recognition, right? You have a lot of images and then you have to have someone telling you the model, hey, this is the correct image. And over time, you develop a model that then allows you to reuse it in machine learning. So in our case, you have, you know, the data inputs from the truck, from the geographic location, from the weather, maintenance logs, combine that with actual breakdowns, and you have a pretty good, you know, opportunity to create a predictive model on breakdowns, which is probably one of the biggest problems for every fleet. Mm-hmm. So could we use AI? Absolutely. Will we? We probably will. But that isn't like, I think for generative AI in general, not talking about like how we would use it, the biggest problem I see is, you know, models reusing their own data.
The
more that humans rely on AI to produce content, mm-hmm. less likely the AI model will improve. Mm-hmm. Because what's happening is it's eating its own output. Mm-hmm. So it's like the snake eating its own tail.
Right. And if the output's flawed to begin with, and then it's brought back in, then it's just creating.
So your output becomes your signal.
It's vicious.
And that causes the model to actually skew further off versus correct. So that I think is going to be with LLM models. That is probably, it makes data after ChatGPT less valuable than before ChatGPT, mm-hmm. which is interesting, unless you can somehow filter out what was created by AI and what was not. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is when you're talking about LLM models, that I think might be one of the biggest things that needs to be solved, just in terms of that specific type of AI. There's probably going to be different types of AI. All of them are going to be it's all going to be statistics, complicated statistics. I don't see us ever using, you know, if-then statements to create a general AI that really gets all the conditions that could possibly ever occur in some massive logic machine.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. Yeah, but the statistical approach, which is usually considered weak AI, not strong AI, I think it definitely is very exciting. But there's, you know, that data problem that needs to be solved long term.
Yeah, it was an interesting take that when I talked to you, I went, never thought of that. You know, that the data is going to be tainted. Mm-hmm. It's only as good as the data that it has access to, right?
So your model, the LLM,
if you've got faulty
bad model.
Yeah, it's going to put out bad output.
Then. Well, when you think about it too, how much of that generated content is just being onto the internet.
Yeah, it's hard to detect it too.
Social media, blog posts. I mean,
I would say the creative output of humanity is going to suffer more than anything else because of AI.
Yeah.
So the people who continue to use their mind and remain creative are probably going to be the rare. Like, I know people talk about, hey, you have to use AI, you know, to stay competitive, to be efficient. I agree. But if you don't constantly practice creativity, eventually, you're going to get replaced by AI too. I mean, you have to constantly exercise a muscle or else you're going to lose it. I mean, creativity is no different than any other kind of discipline.
Sure.
You constantly have to exercise it. So I say that might be one of the most important things in the future. You know, if we do not continue to develop creativity, and it's always going to set people apart. I mean, creative thinking is not, and AI cannot reproduce unique and creative content. Mm-hmm. It can produce average content because that's what the model is built for. made to create average content. It's like what statistics is all about, is predicting what is expected and what is average, and it will produce an average, you know, an average output, which mm-hmm. is often for 50% of the population better than what they could produce, right? Average is better
because
than
it's average, right? Yeah.
Better than what 50% of people can produce. So we've basically taken the worst, you know, the least creative people in humanity and made them average, which I think is a great achievement for AI, but it's not going to replace creative thinking.
Sure.
Because as I said, it could only produce average.
Yeah. No, I got you. So I haven't asked this question before, but I've seen this lately. I've even seen some advertising kind of trending towards this of AI is going to replace programmers, developers, right? And I'm going, I don't see that ever happening.
I mean, I use AI in my programming, and it's not even close. This has been a refrain for almost 30 to 40 years now.
I know. There's been code generators dating back 25 years. Yeah,
they've been trying to replace developers for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're the most hated people in the world. Everyone wants to replace developers because no one wants to pay them.
Right, exactly.
It's
expensive.
It's expensive. But, you know, I don't see it happening.
I don't either, but I wanted your take just because I've yet to talk to... I mean, you still see it, though. There's still people that mostly non-technical people that are going, wow, surely.
I mean...
The computer will start generating all its own code, right? And I'm going, no, it's not.
I mean, the best I could see is maybe you have an AI-type compiler, which takes more human legible instructions, which changes what coding looks like. But ultimately, you're still talking to a machine, and the guy is still really a programmer. You've just changed the language.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy ends up being a programmer, and he thinks he's not, but he's actually giving instructions that might be more human-friendly.
Yeah.
But they really have to be specific. They really have to be detailed.
Right.
They have to be tested. They have to, you know... You have to have someone look at them and correct them, and you have to maintain it probably over time.
Yeah.
That's just the way, and that's programming.
Sure.
Just different form of programming.
It'll probably make it more efficient, right?
Yeah.
It'll make your jobs easier as developers. Maybe.
Depends on the output.
Yeah, I mean, because I use Copilot, GitHub Copilot. There are some things that it's really good for, highly repetitive thing. Let's say I have a list and I'll output it as a CSV file, right? Great for that. Like, because it's something that so many people have done. But if I need a unique implementation of business logic, like, there's no way it's going to be able to do that. It's stuff that's very routine that I used to just, you know, go to Stack Overflow and find that,
right.
Copy and paste. Hopefully I'm not violating any licensing agreements.
Right.
Whatever the Stack Overflow licensing agreement is.
Right.
I hope you're okay. Like, I'm pretty sure everyone's done that.
Yep.
So that is what it's replacing. It makes it much easier and quicker. I don't have to go to Stack Overflow. I just, you know, start the function, name the method, and all of a sudden I have a guess. And that guess is, you know, 90% of the time is correct, especially when it's something that has been done by many other people.
Sure.
But you have to know what you want.
Yeah,
you got to know. That's the thing.
Yeah, you got to know what you want, which means you have to know how to program.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're guessing, and, you know, even if it's right 90% of the time, over time, that 10% failure rate is going to kill any product, right? As a programmer, if you introduce bugs 10% of the time every single day, after a while, there's going to be a lot of bugs. There's going to be a lot of problems to deal with, and it's not sustainable over a long time. So, yeah, it really helps if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, you aren't really going to be able to use it successfully, because over time, its deficiencies will kind of overpower your product.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're going to have a job for a while.
Yeah, just a little bit longer.
That's good to hear. Yeah. All right, so we're all going to have a job for a little while longer. That's awesome.